Okay. Meeting will come to order. Let's begin with a flag salute.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Today is Monday, July 23rd, 2018. This is a public meeting of the Zoning Board of the Township of Clinton, County of Hunterdon, State of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, in that an annual notice was published in the Hunterdon County Democrat, and the notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the bulletin boards in the municipal building, in fact, to the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, the Courier News, the Hunterdon Review, and the Star Ledger no later than the Friday prior to the meeting. Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Filas?
Here.
Mr. Glaser?
Here.
Mr. Lefkis?
Absent.
Dr. Lewis?
Yes, here.
Mr. Mattson?
Here.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Here.
Mr. Roberts?
Here.
Ms. Stevens?
Absent.
And Mr. Yeager?
Here.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to point out we have our planner with us, Tom Behrens, first time in person, just in case anyone doesn't know Tom.
Thank you for that.
I didn't realize.
Thanks for joining us.
Board, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to run down the agenda. We'll do new business vouchers, and I have a proposal I want to talk about when we get the vouchers. We have two sets of meeting minutes to approve. We're going to have a request of extension for time for Zinn Realty, two public hearings for Nagel Creek and Mark Mandel. And then we also have an item which is not listed on the agenda, which is a resolution for Platypus, and we'll put that near the
end.
Okay, anyone else have anything to add to the agenda? Okay, so starting with the vouchers, let me go to my proposal first, and here comes Ms. Stevens.
Hi. Okay. Stevens will join.
I wrote them down.
Nope.
Here.
Yep.
They're down here.
I wrote it down myself.
Okay.
I pulled out the application.
We pulled it out for you.
Oh, thank you.
So we've received a couple questions over the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 months about people saying, as I review the bills, I was recused on one, or I didn't participate in the hearing. Should I recuse myself from the vote on the bills? And in some discussion with John Drill and John Mattson, turns out we don't have to vote on the bills. There's no statutory requirement. So my proposal, which John tells me other townships do, was just do away with the vote. We'll have a piece on the agenda where we can talk about the bills, and if anyone has any comments or questions about them, this would be the appropriate time to raise them. And if there are no issues, then we'll just move on. It doesn't eliminate any of the approvals by the CFO department. I'm still reviewing and signing everyone as is needed. So that's the proposal. Does anyone have a problem with that?
I think the escrow agreement, it talks about, which I happen to read today because there's some long applications, I think it talks about the board approving them, though. I have this funny feeling. Maybe I'm making that up, though. The board shall process, so they have the same manner and the same terms. The respective board shall approve.
What is it?
It's an escrow agreement?
The township escrow agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Says the board shall approve the voucher before payment by the township. So unless that's changed, it's not an MLUL requirement. It's the township imposed a requirement. The township attorney drafted the escrow agreement that the township and the applicant signed. And they made a contractual requirement that whichever board heard the application review and approve the voucher. That's what Bill is pointing out.
Okay. So maybe we ought to vote on it, and this is where in the
maybe you guys can make a suggestion that the township committee do away with that requirement.
Yeah, so we can vote this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to vote until they change it.
Right.
Or get a ruling on it.
Fair.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so We'll come back to that one. We'll plant the seed. This will be first hearing. First hearing on the issue. By the way, I looked through the vouchers, and there was one that stood out. It's a $10,000 charge for Zinn.
Right.
I asked Denise to check. Turns out that one was not supposed to come before us. Is that correct, Denise?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
It was for inspection, so it was work that is done after the approval, so it doesn't affect the board.
Got it.
So that came off the list. And I saw a couple of like, small questions on which Denise answered to my satisfaction. So I will move we approve payment of the bills this morning. I have a second on this.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any abstentions? Denise, you see if we have one of a couple of abstentions on paying the bills?
Me.
Thank you. Okay. Everyone else is in agreement?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, moving on, meeting minutes. First with the minutes of the January 22nd closed session. Second?
Huh?
Yeah, you want to hand them out? Just to the people that were in attendance, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any comments or corrections? No. Is there a motion?
I move that the minutes of the January 22nd executive session be approved.
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Filas?
Yes.
Mr. Glaser?
Yes.
Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. Mattson?
Yes.
And Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay. And you're going to collect these then?
Yes.
Okay, then the minutes of the May 21st meeting. Eligible members, Glaser, McCaffrey, Roberts, Stevens, and Yeager. I didn't have any corrections to it.
Fine with them, too.
You're okay then?
Okay.
Motion to approve, please.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
In a second?
I'll second.
And can you call the roll on this one, please?
Mr. Glaser?
Yes.
Mr. One second here. Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thanks. Next item is request for extension of time for Zinn Realty, and I am going to recuse myself on this issue. Mr. Mattson?
I'm going to do the same. Recuse myself.
Okay, tell us what you're up to.
No, I'll tell you what. So Zinn Realty has requested an extension. There's a letter by Don Schumann, who's a real estate
manager for the project.
Okay, dated June 27, 2018, and he addresses this to the Board of Adjustment, and he says, "Dear members, by resolution of the Clinton Township Board of Adjustment number 2017-04, among other things, the time for Zinn Realty to obtain construction permits and commence construction was extended to August 21, 2018. The construction contract is currently being fine-tuned. Upon signing, application will be made for appropriate permits, but because there is no certainty as when the application for permits will be made, there's concern that the issuance of permits may not take place by August 21, therefore explaining the request for a further extension. So can you just identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Randy Klein.
Okay.
I'm a principal of Zinn Realty.
And now, can you raise your right hand? You swear that the testimony you're about to give is going to be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth to help you, God.
I do.
And in a nutshell, first, can you explain how long do you want the extension for? Because the letter doesn't say so.
I guess what I don't want to do is have to...
I need to recuse myself.
Oh. Ah, okay. So William Glazer just recused himself for the record.
So anyway, what I don't want to do is have to take the boards and our time again. So I don't want to make it up something that's going to be short enough and risk it being close. We, as any of you know who drive by the site, site work has moved along rather significantly, and I suspect will be done within the next month or so. We already have a contract that's, as mentioned in the letter, pretty close to being finalized, but we know how those things go, and especially over the summertime, and we know that we've learned our lesson from the last time, that even if we get the request in before the deadline, there's a period of time that the powers that be have to review the request and issue the permits, and there's a significant risk that we wouldn't make it in time. Additionally, we were also advised by Mr. Wright, who reviewed some of the documents at the time that we finally went through the site plan approval, that although our two floors are each ground level, some rules got changed at the state level that now require even that building to have an elevator. So we had to do some redesign on the project. So that kind of pushed us back a little. In any case,
I have a suggestion.
Yes.
I'm looking at that resolution 2017-04, and it had granted an extension to August 21, 2018, in the time within which to obtain the construction permits, and then a year after that to get the complete construction and get the final CO. And condition 19 was modified to push out the expiration of the final site plan protection period to August 21, 2019. So maybe if you guys don't want to see them again for a while, and since the final protection period was pushed out to August 21, 2019, maybe just, even though a lot of times you only like to give 6 months at a time, maybe give them a year to August 21, 2019. That will be the same time as their extension period. And then if they have some problem, they'd be coming back for the other one anyway, then they can come back for both. That's just a suggestion.
From my perspective, that would more than suffice.
Well, it certainly makes sense to me. As long as things are moving along, people haven't forgotten the project so that it's a sleeping variant. I don't think there's any downside to extending it for a year instead of 6 months.
What are the other board members? Anyone have an issue with that?
That's fine. So we're only extending the approvals to match the construction.
Only extending the time within which to obtain the permits.
Right.
To match the final protection period. Extending it from August 21, 2018 to August 21, 2019. Someone want to make a motion to extend the time for permits to August 21, 2019?
I make such a motion.
I'll second.
Someone seconding it?
I did.
Oh.
Ms. Stevens.
I'm ahead of you.
So, Mr. Pilot?
Yes.
Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. Mattson?
Yes.
Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
And Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
Okie dokie.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll get our friends. Yes?
Thank you.
Okay, we're on to public hearing for Nagel Creek. Julia Hirsch. Good evening. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again, Chairman and board members. For the record, Juliet Hirsch, Archer and Greiner, Flemington for Nagel Creek. I think before I start, I should just ask if public notice is in order. I've provided an affidavit of service.
Correct.
Yeah,
very
good. Thank
order.
You.
I've checked everything.
Okay, this is an application by the property owner, Nagel Creek, for a use variance to convert a single-family dwelling into a two-family dwelling, which appears to be the prior use of the building itself. The property is at 107 Annandale High Bridge Road. It is Block 61, Lot 3. We believe that the use variance is justified because the use of the property for a two-family dwelling is the property is particularly suited for that use, which is one of the bases on which a use variance may be granted, in addition to serving some of the purposes of the municipal land use law. We believe the property is particularly suited both with respect to the existing building that is located thereon, because, as you will hear from Mr. Longo, our architect, that building contains the layout inside, demonstrates that it probably was divided into two dwellings at some point in the past. Just to make it clear, we are not arguing that this is a legal non-conforming use, because, of course, we could not make that argument. The property at some point appears to have been a two-family dwelling, and then at some other point was converted back to a single-family structure, which it is currently. I did an OPR request to your construction office and also to the board to try to find out if there were any approvals or any construction permits which would show us when it became a two-family dwelling in the past, when it was converted to a single-family dwelling, and the records that I obtained showed various repairs that had been made to the property before Nagel Creek owned it, but did not show any activity that would add up to converting it from a two-family to a single-family. So, again, just to be clear, we're not arguing that it's a non-conforming use. We're arguing that one of the reasons why the property is particularly suited for a two-family dwelling use is that the building itself is already laid out that way. The other major reason relates to the property itself. It is a very large lot in this particular zone. It is over 3.5 acres in size, whereas this is a zone, it's your SR zone, in which 1.5 acre lots are permitted. And here again, we're not arguing that we should have the right to subdivide it into two lots, because there are some limitations. But on a gross acreage basis, it is a very large lot for that zone. It is also situated adjacent to the property that contains the Clinton Public Works garage. And there are certain impacts, obviously, that you're aware of, and you'll hear from our experts as a result of that. Additionally, the New Jersey Transit line is behind the property. And so there are some surrounding uses that are not your typical residential uses. From the documents we've submitted and from the testimony you will hear from our engineer, Jim Hill, there is no problem in providing sufficient parking for a two-family dwelling. And we have obtained an allocation of sewage capacity from the Clinton Township Sewage Authority for two dwelling units. As far as the water goes, Mr. Hill's report, which he will discuss with you tonight, explains why there is sufficient water from the existing well on the property to serve, allow the property to be served as a two-family dwelling. Tonight I have with me the owner's representative, Mr. Shapiro. I'd like to introduce him to you. He's also the owner of the Courtside Racquet Club, so he is an existing businessman in Clinton Township. Our architect is Robert Longo. You have his report, which he will discuss in greater detail with you tonight. Our engineer is Mr. Hill, Jim Hill, who I'm sure you all know. And our planner is Daniel Block from Mazur Consulting. Okay. Just one kind of minor point. Dan had raised a question with me about whether the township's Highlands ordinances apply here. And I'm sorry I did not put this in my paperwork, but I looked at your ordinance, and it's section 165-41.1A1. Since this application proposes the creation of less than three dwelling units, the Highlands Review Ordinance is not applicable. So there is no need to refer the application to the Highlands, although if the board does determine to grant the use variance, we would ask that you forward that decision to the Highlands Council to make sure the call-up procedures are triggered. Okay, so if it's okay with the board, I'd like to start with my first witness.
Yeah, let's swear everyone.
Let's get everyone sworn. So everyone who Ms. Hurst mentioned plus the board's planning expert, everyone stand up, please.
Mr. Shapiro, you also, please.
Right, and let's start here, and we'll go this way. Identify yourself, spell your last name, and give your relationship to the board or applicant, as the case may be.
Tom Behrens, board planner, last name B-E-H-R-E-N-S.
And you're PH.
S-C-H-A-P-I-R-O, applicant.
When you say applicant, what's the form of...
It's an LLC that I own, Nagel.
Okay, so you own 100% of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Daniel Block, B-L-O-C-H, planner for the applicant. Robert Longo, L-O-N-G-O, architect.
Okay, so everyone, raise your hands. Does everyone swear the testimony you're going to give in this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth to help you, God?
Yes, I do.
Okay. They do.
Okay. Mr. Longo, I don't know if you've testified before this board before.
I don't believe so.
Okay. Would you please introduce yourself by providing your qualifications, your education experience, and any licenses you may have?
Sure. Again, my name is Robert Longo. I'm the founding partner of Cornerstone Architectural Group. Located at 202 Hamilton Boulevard in South Plainfield, New Jersey. I have a Bachelor of Architecture degree from the School of Architecture at NGIT, so I'll be signed in 1986. Sorry. A licensed architect in the state of New Jersey for 29 years. I'm also a licensed building code official, licensed land planner. I'm a certified interior designer. I'm a lead AP for sustainability. And in my part-time, I've been teaching as an adjunct professor at Brookdale Community College for 19 years.
So I ask that Mr. Longo be accepted.
What do you teach at Brookdale Community College?
I teach building design, I teach construction, I teach building codes, and I teach interior design.
Thank you for that question. I would ask the board to accept Mr. Longo as an expert in architecture.
Okay. So anyone have any questions as to qualifications? No.
Anyone in the audience questions?
Anyone in the audience have any questions? Is there anyone here to speak that's on this application that's either an objector or a supporter? And I see no one raising their hand. So let the record reflect.
One other question. Is the witness being picked up on the recording?
I was just about to speak to the witness about that. Our handheld microphone is not working, so if when you're standing, if you could hold one of the table mics with you.
Sure.
Please.
Okay.
There you go.
This is the first for me? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so I was asked to provide an opinion about whether or not this building was a multifamily house in the past. And after visiting the house and investigating it and doing the drawings that you see in front of you, the conclusion that I came to is, yes, it was, and I'll explain to you why.
Can I stop you just for a minute?
Sure.
The drawings that you have up on the easel, are they contained within the report that you submit, that we submitted with the application, the report from January of this year?
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
Do we need to mark them? No?
Nope.
I also have some photographs, which you might mark on the back of this board. And I have reduced copies of both, which I'm happy to hand out. Might be easier for you to look at the smaller copies in front of you, so let me do that.
Hold on one sec. So the board has an 8.5 by 11 of what you have up on the board.
Yes. Correct.
Okay. So it looks like you have two exhibits that you're going to mark.
I have one. I had this is those are the engineering drawings. So this is
right.
This is the same drawing.
We already have that.
Larger.
You're saying you have a copy that's smaller than what's on the board, but larger than what's in the board's packet.
Correct.
I get it.
And I also have larger photographs. I have reduced copies of those as well. So I'd like to give those to the board so that you can look at those as we're talking through this. So
I would say that those are demonstrative exhibits. No need to mark them because it's already in the board package. But if you want to give them out to make it easier for the board to see, that would be great.
Those are the plans. They can go that way. These are photographs.
Oh. There should be enough for everybody.
Thank you. Right down to the last one.
Just a lucky guess. Because that drawing contains five separate drawings. There's three floor plans and two elevations. So the building has three levels, which we've called the first floor, the second floor, and there's a finished attic space. So those are the three floor plans. In addition, there's two elevations. There's a front elevation, which is where the entry is, and there is one side elevation. So if you look at the second floor plan, which is essentially the main floor plan, it's the middle floor, there is...
Just for the record, when you refer to that drawing, let's call it what it's called here, drawing EA-100, okay?
Okay. It's my drawing EA-100. Our nomenclature is E for existing, A for architectural, 100. And then this drawing depicts the existing conditions as they are today, or at least as of last Friday. So the floor plan here, the second floor, as we're calling it, is the main level. And you'll see here that this building, if you look at the floor plan closely, you'll see that, in my opinion, it's very likely two units. It's a very symmetrical layout. In the center, and the photographs will help as well, we'll get to those in a moment. In the center of the space is a very large kitchen. And that kitchen, in my opinion, was once two spaces, two different kitchens. And the reason for that is there's a couple of reasons that I feel that way. One is the size of the kitchen, first of all. The second is that it has two doors. You'll notice there's a door to the kitchen here on the right and another one here to the left. It's a very unusual layout for any sort of space like that. You can see those two doors again here, the elevation. There's one door here and one door here. And you'll notice, I'll show the photographs, you'll see clearly that there are some differences that I'll point out regarding flooring and finishes. But I want to walk you through with this floor plan and what I believe that it once was. Right now, you have a kitchen in the center, which again I believe was divided right in the half. So it had one unit on this side and one unit on that side. This was a kitchen, this was a living space, this was a bedroom, and a bathroom, and that was that one unit. On the other side, we had a kitchen, which again was half of the existing kitchen. We had a living space. We had a bathroom, which is now a closet. We had a bedroom and a bedroom. And this one bedroom is now a very large bathroom. But these were two bedrooms. These were two bedrooms. This was a living space. And this large space, which is one kitchen, was two kitchens. So let me flip us over. We'll look at some photographs.
Do you mind if I just ask a question? You
sure.
Talk about the kitchen being oversized. You have the approximate dimensions of...
It's approximately 12 by 24. So kids, keep in mind, this house is almost 90 years old. So like a 12 by 24 kitchen right now is really still a nice-sized kitchen. You know, 90 years ago, that would have been the largest kitchen probably in the county, if there was one kitchen.
To be clear, if that were divided in half, it would be 12 by 4.
Correct. Correct. And also notice that if we agree that these are the bedroom spaces, that there's a little hallway here that serves these two bedrooms, and another little hallway here that serves these two bedrooms, but there's no way to connect them. So it would be very odd to not be able to get from one bedroom to the other bedroom without having to go through the kitchen and around. So just it just sort of makes sense.
Before you take that down,
yes.
What about the stairs, though? Because the stairs only come up to one unit.
That's a good question. So the stairs are a bit of a mystery in some regard, but there's stairs that go down to the basement here mm-hmm. and then go up to the attic. There is a dead space right here in the plan, if you can see this large dead space right here.
Okay.
I can't get in there without some destructive tools, but I believe that there was a stair going down right here. And I'll show you some other evidence of that on the photographs in just a second.
Okay, thank you.
Can I trouble you one more time?
Sure.
But we're talking about the main level being on the second level. What is happening now with the other levels of the building?
A fair question. So basically, I have two wide open space, a wide open space in the basement level, which I'm calling it's the first floor. So this space is half in the ground in the back, but it's fully exposed in the front. So it's just a wide open space, and there's a small laundry space and some utility space in the back. It's just one large open space right now. In the attic, which is this long, skinny space, there's a subdivision here, which there was a bedroom here that was built sometime, and then there's just an open space here with a stair coming up.
For a house of this age, is it common to have the main living level on the second floor, or whatever floor you want to call it?
I think that's a little unusual for any home, quite honestly. But I think it probably has to do with the way that the site is sloped and that the fact that the lowest level, the first floor, is really half in the ground in the back. And I think that's probably the reason why. There's also a continuous balcony that runs across the front, and there's two stairs. You can see one stair on this side elevation here. The photographs will clear that up as well. But there's a stair here, and there's a stair here. So people are entering from both sides and then very likely going into two different doors into two different units. Okay, so a photograph. So this is the best shot that depicts sort of the front elevation, if you will. Again, the doors are hard to see in this photograph.
Just for the record, there's an 11.5 by 17 sheet that has 10 photographs on it, and that's handed out to the board in the file, and you just have a large size of that on the board, so there's no need to mark it as an exhibit, correct?
Correct. So top center is the front elevation. And the doors that you see in the elevation are kind of difficult to see because of the shadow of the overhang. There's about a 6-foot deep porch along the front of the building. You can see it here, and you can see in this left photograph as well. But there's a door here, and there's a door here that are, I think, a little more clear in the elevation. You can see one of the sets of stairs here coming up the side, as well as you can see that in this photograph here. The last one to the right in the top is from the porch. And you can see one of the doors is open, which is the door to the right, and then you can see the other door a little farther back in the distance here. So those are the two doors. It's perfectly symmetrical. It's a door, two windows and a door. So it's sort of a very logical setup. In the center row of photographs, there is a panorama you can see in the center, which captures the whole space. It looks a little distorted because, again, it was taken with a panoramic lens. But you can see it's the only way I can get both doors in. You can see clearly both doors, one door to the right, one door to the left. Now, there's just one sink, and there's just one stove, and there's just one refrigerator, because now it is just one kitchen, because that's the way it currently is. Center photograph to the left, you'll see where the island ends. With this. Again, you can see the setup of the appliances there. But one of the telltale signs that this space was divided in half is a photograph in the center all the way to the right. If you look closely in the floor, this floor I believe is original, you will see there's a patch in the floor where there once, I believe, was a wall, which is right in the center of the space. So that line right there was a wall that separated the kitchen into two different spaces. On the bottom, there's two pictures of the bathroom. This was the bathroom that was added in what I believe once was a bedroom. It's a very large bathroom, so this is clearly an alteration that happened sometime later. The other two photographs are evidence that the large bathroom was once a bedroom and there was a second bathroom. So if you look at the floor plan drawing, on the left side, below the large bathroom, there's a small space that is now a closet, though it's not labeled. That was a bathroom. And it's about the size of the other bathroom. And that space is the bottom right photograph. And you can see it here. And what I tried to capture here was the difference in the flooring. The entire first floor, main floor of this house, has the same wood floor, except in the bathroom. And the reason for that is because you typically tile a bathroom. So my opinion is that this space here was once tiled because it was a bathroom, and then somebody tried to get a floor that looked kind of close to the other floor that was there to match what was there. In addition to that, there was a question about the second stair. This is the closet where that blank space is. So I'm going to turn this back over again and show you where I believe the second stair was, which was right here. There's a little closet here off the hallway, and that photograph's of that closet. And then again, this space here is just inaccessible at the moment. But I believe that was a stair going down, and I believe that on top of that stair from this side, from the bathroom side, which was a bedroom, was the closet that served that bedroom. And I believe that to be the case because if you look at that photograph, you will see, if you look closely, two things. One is that it has the same floor as the bathroom, meaning a different floor than the rest of the house, meaning it was patched. And if you look closely, you can see that the ceiling in the back of that closet is sloping down. So it's pretty convincing evidence to me that that was once a stair going down. So what we have is a house that is a one single family home now, but was very likely two units previously.
Do you know when the renovations were done?
I do not.
Mr. Longo, on this first floor bottom level, let's call it the bottom level, is any of that open or is this all enclosed drywall ceilings?
It's all enclosed. It's all drywall.
All enclosed.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I shouldn't say that, except for the mechanical space in the back. There's a small mechanical space back here that is open, this little space here.
Which does not come in line with any of this plumbing or anything that show up differently if you looked in the beams or floor
joists? Well, the evidence would be over here in this corner where the bathroom was and where the stair, I believe, was. That's all drywall, and that's all finished ceiling.
Okay, that's all finished. There's no way for access into that.
Yeah, not without doing some demolition, yeah. I thought the evidence, the visual evidence that I could see without doing any destructive demolition was, to me, proof enough.
I understand, but my question is any of it visible when you're saying no?
It is not.
Okay.
Mr. Longo, a question I didn't get a chance to ask you is, if the board were to grant this use variance, can you give us an idea of how the house would be divided up back into two units?
We've had some discussions, my client and I, about that. You know, more than likely, we would divide the first, the main floor, the second floor, calling the second floor again, in half, and then we'll very likely put a stair back in here and give the attic to one side and give the basement to the other. So you'd have half of the main level, the middle level, and the attic, or the other half and the basement. There are other ways to do it, which we'll investigate. That's probably the most likely scenario.
So the primary access to both units would be from the second floor as it is?
Yes.
The balcony level?
Yes.
And you wouldn't expect the upper level or the lower level to be living space? They'd be more storage space?
No, I think they would be living space. I mean, they're finished spaces now, so I would expect them to
Are
be,
they both heated?
They are both. They're all conditioned spaces, yeah.
And so are you proposing to, is it likely, let's say, that you would maintain the same layout on the existing second floor, except for dividing the kitchen into two?
Yes.
Any idea in terms of number of bedrooms or bathrooms? I mean, it's kind of tough for the board without seeing.
So there's two bedrooms now on each side. And then this is the bedroom in the attic, so it's probably going to be a two and a three, or we could probably fit two threes, but I think it would probably be a two and a three, one two-bedroom, one three-bedroom.
Do you have a plan with you showing what the two-unit divided structure would look like?
Do not.
Do you propose to make any changes to the visual aspect of the outside of the building?
Well, I think we're going to do some cosmetic upgrades, but there's, you know, additions proposed or anything like that. So it's really just cosmetic upgrades.
It's somewhere in one of the documents about a firewall. Is that something I read or didn't read? Between the two units?
Mm-hmm. From Mike Wright.
No, it's firewall.
Well, yeah, so any multi-dwelling unit would need to have fire separation between units, which can be easily accomplished with you know, wood and drywall. So that would be a condition of a building permit when we change this from a one-family. If the board granted approval, when we went to get permits for a one- to two-family, that would be part of the construction documents.
So what happens to the door on a lower level in the front of the building?
I mean, I imagine it would stay. It could still be an entrance for that unit. I don't see a reason to get rid of it. We haven't really sort of talked through exactly, you know, what we would do. Again, we're not really talking about any significant changes to the building other than trying to find, you know, internal access to the basement from one side. Because right now, the stairs that exist access the attic and the basement both from the same side. So I think we're likely to just try to change that so that one half would have access to the attic, like I said, and one to the basement.
Just curious, when you look at the photographs, the middle photograph in the top row, which is a straight-on shot of the building?
Yes.
If you open that door right now, can you orient me? That would be the existing floor plan on the opposite side, and that just goes into a large space?
So this door here on the main level?
No.
Oh, you're saying on the lower? Yeah. That one.
Right.
That goes right into the first floor level. That door is...
The upper left-hand existing floor plan?
Correct. That's that door right there.
And so when you walk in that door, that's just all open space as reflected on
Correct.
The drawing?
Correct. And these little squares are just structural. They're columns.
And again, you're not proposing dividing that up. One unit would get that lower level and one unit would get the upper level.
Correct.
Any idea what the, it's not my God's question, but what the proposed square footages might look like, or at least the footprint if we divide it in two and
well, each, three levels? Well, the two main levels are each 1,500 square feet, okay. And the attic is 700. Okay. So it would be 750 plus 700, so 1,450, and it would be 750 plus 1,500, so 2,250.
Might be a question for someone else on your team, but are there any other homes in the area or even the region that exhibit a two-family dwelling in this?
I think that might come up in the planning testimony. That's not something I'm
prepared. You're not up there yet. And then, who's going to go over parking? Your engineer?
Yes.
Okay.
Obviously, the building would comply with all building code requirements, and it would be able to do that.
Yes.
As proposed.
Was your question again, please, Tom?
Would the building be able to comply with all building code requirements if it was made a two-family home? And he said, yes, it would be able to be made to comply.
Okay. How would you accomplish, because in this letter, it is from Mike Wright, it says that you'll need a one-hour fire barrier between the units. How would you propose to do that between the lower level that goes to one unit and the top level that goes to another unit?
Yeah, it's just a matter of rating the ceiling. Right now, it's we haven't investigated exactly what it is, but it's drywall. It might be drywall on top of plaster. But you can do a new construction with two layers of 5/8 drywall. So depending on exactly what's there, so we'll have to sort of make a few holes to see exactly what it is, but it can be done with drywall on top of the existing structure.
Right. What a question. I don't know if it's for him, but I noticed on the site plans there are two garages and a shed. Would there be any changes to those, or is that not part of this? Or?
Yeah, I think someone else will testify to that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill?
I'm Jim Hill, professional engineer, state of New Jersey, working for Mr. Shapiro on this project. I've been in New Jersey since 1984 and licensed in 1985 as an engineer, also certified by Mr. Engineer. Sometimes not John.
Question, do you sometimes appear at other boards
yes,
around?
We've appeared at probably over 20 some boards within the New Jersey.
Okay.
I'm also licensed in New York State, and I've appeared in boards up there.
And your education, please?
SUNY Forestry for Bachelor of Science in Engineering, Forestry Engineering, and a civil degree out of Syracuse University this year.
Okay.
And you're being proposed as an engineering expert in this application, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And you're employed by, please, Mr. Helm?
Fry Engineering, down at 117 State Highway 31.
Okay. And how long have you been there, sir?
I've been there since 2012.
Okay. Okay. Questions? Is this qualification?
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay.
Basically, as was being pointed out by the architect, I have...
Yeah, how many? You have two exhibits there, or do you have things on the back also?
I've got three.
Okay, so you need exhibit A1 through A3, so hold up. We're going to have tags made for you.
Mr. Hill, which of these exhibits?
Yeah, you got to hold on.
Well, this would affect whether you want to make the tag.
This is the site plan
itself. That's in the board file?
Yes.
So we don't need a tag for that. So how many exhibits do you have?
I have two.
Okay.
Second one is...
So what's your first exhibit?
The first exhibit was the entire site plan graphic representation.
Okay, can you bring that over here, please? So exhibit A1 is an aerial site map graphic representation prepared by
our office.
Jim Hill, dated of July 2018. Okay, and you have exhibit A2?
Exhibit A2 would be the site photographs that were superimposed on what was C1.
Okay, so exhibit A2 is titled, I see what you did. So four photos taped onto
C1.
Onto drawing C1. And this drawing C1 is from the board's file?
Yes.
With the date of 5/22/18?
Correct.
Okay. We're good.
Could you grab the microphone, please, sir? Thank you.
Exhibit A1 is an increased size aerial map of the one that I had in my water supply and sewer analysis report, basically showing the location of the site itself in the center, and then we had a 200 and 500 foot well diagrams on there with the location of those wells, and it also has the 200 foot notification boundary around the property just to show you where the site sits in relation to some of the properties around it. And as was indicated by Juliet, the Township DPW facility is located to the northwest of the property. It's the property immediately adjacent to the site plan that's under hearing tonight. And basically, up there, you have storage buildings, salt shed, garage, office, and what used to be the old house and a shed behind it, and parking for all the facilities plus the fuel facilities are behind what used to be the old salt shed. The remainder of the area, as will be explained by the planner, you have residential properties to the northeast. You have two of them directly across the road along Willow Court, and then there's a small single-family dwelling located about 500 feet to the south along the county road. On the site itself, you have the main structure, as is shown in A2. You have two garage areas that are in the back. On this one, it's an older photograph. It shows what used to be an old barn that was demolished because it was basically failing and was falling right off the foundation. So that was demoed through a permit from the township. So we only have the two garages and the main house. Currently, the site is served by an on-site septic system that's located just west of the house. It's small and it's totally non-functional at this time. And the private well is located about 25 feet to the east of the existing house. On A2, I just basically some of the same ones that the architect showed. Photograph in the upper left side is basically a main view of the main building, showed both the balcony and the access up to the second floor. The picture on the right was taken from the roadway looking back toward the house to show some of the other structures on the property, and also there was a possibility of a second lateral location at that point from CTSA. The bottom left photograph was the action we took to find the actual lateral that's available from the sewer authority that we were able to find and locate and mark so that we can hook into that later on. And then lower right-hand photograph is just basically a view of the road frontage as you drive along Annandale High Bridge Road in that area, showing it curves to the left as you go north and west along the road. Okay. As far as the well capacity, you'll notice in my water and wastewater supply report that we did a test that took approximately 4 hours, and we drew it at capacity that exceeded the actual ordinance requirements for obtaining water supply for the unit. And we were able to, within the four-hour period of time, as will show in the tables in the back, that we were able to be able to supply the generally 600 gallons per day that would be required for the site without affecting the well itself. It had a drawdown of approximately 170 feet out of 300. The pump itself is set at 210 feet, so we have capacity above that. The water level in the well was at about 4.5 feet below ground when we did the initial supply, and we looked at it again last week, and it was at 9.5 feet, so we lost about 4 feet just to the groundwater fluctuation that you'd normally get during a dry period during the summer.
Question?
Yes.
I noticed that the test is supposed to run for 4 hours. Is that by ordinance?
By ordinance.
And that is, ran it for 2 hours?
We ran it for more than 2 hours. Part of it is the rebound effort.
Was there some reason you didn't run it the full 4 hours?
We just ran out of time to do it during that day. So
I noticed you ran this in the morning, right? 10
yes.
o'clock in the morning?
Yes.
You just had something else to do?
The start-off had other things to do that day, too, so we couldn't run it for the full time, but we did pull the full capacity for what was needed during the day during that time.
600. I came up with about 8.2 gallons per minute from 825 to 1030-something. Is that
yeah.
right?
Okay. Yes. On what page of the report?
Well, the four-hour requirement is listed on page 4 of 6, halfway down the first full paragraph.
Okay.
Attachment B contains the testing. The test was run in close approximation of one above, but
right.
due to time constraints, the full 4 hours was not accomplished, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Tell me again, is that an ordinance requirement for the 4 hours?
It's in your Chapter 165 as part of your environmental impact statement.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. With regard to the sanitary sewer disposal, as was mentioned, the applicant did go to the Clinton Township Sewer Authority and presented the need to possibly obtain a second unit of flow at 300 gallons per day. There was one assigned to the property during the original inception of the Sewer Authority plans, except that they were granted a variance or a waiver from having to hook up due to where the house is located, et cetera. So they already had one unit on file with the authority. They went in and they got the second unit. So we do have enough to do 600 gallons per day. On the plan that I presented on page 2 is a draft of what we're going to submit to CTSA, depending upon what approval that we might receive tonight for full use of the two units. Then we'll submit the final plan to them, get it approved, and then send it back to Kathleen for her review.
Where, the graph's on
where's there? Where's that? The graph? Not on my page 2.
It's not on page 2 in our report.
No, not on the report, on the plan.
Oh, on the plan. Can you flip this?
Okay, to explain it, basically, with the plumbing that is being suggested through the plumbing and redesign of the building for two apartments, we're going to exit with the proposed pump station and plan. We'll go out the north side of the building, or east end of the north side, come straight up toward the road, turn right, come down, and cross the driveway about 15 feet away from the existing lateral so that we have room to make a turn hook into the lateral. It'll only require a single pump type of system with the capacity to handle probably a full day's flow as excess capacity in case of a power outage.
I don't know if I saw this in here or if Ms. Hirsch mentioned that you got the extra capacity from the sewage authority.
Yes, we do, by resolution.
Okay, that's what I saw in here. The resolution's in here, correct?
I believe it's part of the application.
It wasn't in there.
Okay, got it.
Okay. So what you have on the plan is a rendition of what we propose to submit to the authority in final form after making a final review of what we need based upon that.
All right, but that, okay, so what you're saying is that you have a plan on how to do your hookup, and that's for the authority to either approve or disapprove, but for purposes of the Board of Adjustment, you have a resolution which gives you the capacity, correct?
That's correct, sir. With regard to the parking, we've indicated on the plan that there is sufficient space in the existing paved area, that would be the upper left photograph on A2, to supply 5 spaces of parking, which appears to be in compliance with RSIS standards, including 1 visitor space. And we can do those at the standard of 10 by 20 that town requires, and we'd also add curb stops in the front because there is no block, Belgian block or anything else like that around the paving itself. So there's sufficient room to provide parking for the unit without disturbing anything on the ground. The rest of the area that has gravel driveways and so on just access the 2 garages. There's no other use of those.
Jim, excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Good question. With your parking in front of houses for the 2 apartments, can they also use the gravel and parking area, the tenants or any overflow or guests go to the garage areas?
I would believe they could, yes. I mean, it's continuous use right off the end of the pavement onto the gravel, so that would be an arrangement through the owner if they had to do that.
Okay.
It's there. It's accessible, and it's got
so
area.
They could be used for an overflow if necessary. And let me just go back when you're talking about the water supply. Is there a public water supply? Would you know the closest location?
The closest location would be south of the bridge for the railroad, going back down in toward Annandale. Hmm. And then to the north, that's all the way up to High Bridge. It's too far away to pull the water to it, nor would they grant us to go get it.
Okay.
And the houses immediately in the neighborhood are also on well water in that section.
Yeah, I saw on your plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. just trying to think. Basically, that is the proposal is the fact that we feel that the client, the applicant, can actually conduct the work that's required, remodel the house, and have everything up to code without having to disturb additional areas on the property except for the area that we would need to close up the old septic system and also the area that we would need to the north and east to be able to get a force main back over to the sanitary sewer. Other than that, we do not plan to disturb anything outside of the paved or graveled areas.
And Jim, just in terms of the existing conditions on the house, how they compare with zoning requirements, you could just
basically describe. Yes. With the zoning requirements that are shown on C1, we find ourselves compliant with all of the standards except for one, which is the setback of the main building from the side yard, which I believe needs a small variance. It's at 20.9 feet versus 35.
And that's an existing condition.
Right. Yes.
Okay. And how about the coverage on the
The
coverage applies in this?
Okay, yes. The building coverage is 35%, 15% that's allowed by the township, and we're at 3.19, which includes the main dwelling. And the question about the one other building on the property, that's actually an old milk house way station. It's located next to the driveway and the two garages.
And that would not change?
No, that would not change.
3.1%.
Yes, that is not intended to change, correct. Okay.
Has an application been submitted to the Huntington County Planning Board?
Yes.
And do we have a response yet?
Not yet.
Okay. And how about Huntington County Soil Conservation?
Believe it or not, we're below 5,000 square feet on disturbance, so we have not yet had to submit to the district, but we will just send a plan down later on just to make sure of it.
Are there any other outside governmental permits that you can think of other than the ones we've mentioned so far? In other words, Clinton Township Sewerage Authority, do we need a DEP sewer connection permit?
Not for this connection. It's small enough that it wouldn't require a permit other than from the sewer authority.
Any DEP permits other than that one, which is
no.
Not required?
No.
Okay. So it's county planning board because it's on a county road, and you'll go to SCD and see just to
make sure.
Analysis.
Yes.
And no other governmental approvals required.
Just the town.
Just to follow up, I'm looking at your zoning chart in the upper left-hand corner of C1, and under maximum building coverage existing, there's an X. What did you say the maximum building coverage was?
I think you have we had to do a revision.
I have 6718. You have a revision after that?
There was because we had to add the coverage to it, and it's 3.18%. I will give you a copy if you
want. What's the date on that?
I think the revision was.
Can you guys look at your plan? What do you have in the revision box? Sheet one of C1.
Revision one.
Right. And what's up in your upper left hand corner on your zoning chart? Under.
I have 3.18 under existing.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm just wondering, because I know you and I talked about coverage requirements.
Hold on for a second. It looks like when your office submitted, they're both dated 6/7/18. Some of them have that change, some don't. Were there any other changes you made on the June 7th, 2018? That was the only change?
That was in response to the incompleteness report.
Okay, but you didn't change the, in other words, I have one in front of me, revision 1, 6, 7, 18, that does not, both of them say that they were changed per Township Board Secretary letter dated 6/6/18. But one of them has the chart changed, one of them doesn't. Some board members have the chart changed, some don't. So
no other change.
Just for the record, the only change is that where the X is under maximum building coverage under existing, it should be 3.18%. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Look, I'm going to give you this one for the file.
Okay, yeah, because even the one has the right date.
I know. Take this one. I'm going to treat that one off just in case. Stranger things have happened.
Does he want one?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having one. Thank you.
Yeah. More testimony?
Okay.
I have nothing further for Mr. Hill.
I guess. One more question.
Yeah, I have one more, but go ahead.
No, don't yet. What was said by the attorney as well as yourself, the area of this lot is twice the amount that's required for an existing one, for a single-family lot.
Yes.
Okay. Is this subdividable?
In checking the limits of what is mapped on GeoWeb as wetlands, no. It takes up more area than would be allowed to make two lots that would meet the critical 100% removal of critical lands.
So it would take it away.
It would take it away.
Okay, so it would not be subdivided.
Would not be subdivided.
Okay.
Thank you. You're not proposing any lighting changes outside, are you?
No. There are some, I would call them landscape lights along the front of the porch. We're not proposing to make a change on those. No.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm not an engineer. Could you explain the wetlands? Explanation as to why it's not subdivided.
Are you saying that the wetlands are considered critical areas under the township ordinance, and the township ordinance excludes critical areas from lot size?
That's correct.
That's what he said.
He didn't say that.
You said it very nicely.
That's what he meant.
When one applies the critical area part of the ordinance to this one, that is one of the subtractions of 100% that you have to take.
What ordinance section is that, by the way, the critical area?
It's in actually part of the zoning here.
That was a test question.
It's part of the checklist for the zoning maps.
You passed.
Final question. So you mentioned the existing septic system is not in working order.
Correct.
So in any event, it would have to be replaced.
It's correct.
The building, obviously, it's not occupied at the moment. Just wanted to be clear.
Nope, it's not occupied.
So have you evaluated the cost of what it would take to connect it to the building as having a septic system?
The current DEP code for putting in septic systems, I wouldn't advise putting one in there.
From a cost perspective?
From a cost perspective and the fact that the soils and so on are not beneficial for trying to do one at that site.
So the applicant, if the board finds the application favorable, will necessarily tie in to what?
Yes.
I guess it would be our recommendation that is a condition that they have to tie in.
That what the condition be that if the board grants the use variance, that they be required to tie into the public sewer?
Yes, for a two-family use. And last question pertaining to the parking, because it's obviously a single-family zone, the parking's a bit different than your typical driveway situation. Looks like you're a little over 100 feet from the roadway, which is fairly well-traveled. Have you discussed with your client about providing a little bit of screening in front of the easterly portion of the parking area in the front yard, whether it be fencing or landscaping or both?
No, we have not.
Is that something might be willing?
When we saw your report, okay. Mr. Shapiro, we'll do that. Maybe we could work something out with your office as to what the appropriate.
So that might be a condition again if the board finds out.
Yep.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Hill? And again, there's no one in the public to comment on this application. Okay, thank you.
One question. The driveway and parking area is currently paved?
Yes.
And then the area behind it is gravel?
That's correct.
Our last witness is professional planner Dan Block.
Good evening. My name is Dan Block with Mazur Consulting. I'm a licensed professional planner. Our office is over in Perryville, just 8 to 12 down in 78. I have a bachelor's degree from the University of Buffalo in environmental design. licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey and certified by the American Institute of Certified Planners. I've been testifying before Board of Crawford, New Jersey for about 8 years. Never before this one, though.
No, I think we've never seen you before. Welcome. And you're submitting yourself as a planner, obviously, right? Any questions as to this qualification? Okay.
All right, so I reviewed all the application documents, the town's master plan, zoning ordinance, the zoning map. In preparation of this application, I've been to the site, visited the surrounding properties. We'll go through the existing conditions. I don't have to repeat too much of what was already testified to, but we do have an existing dwelling that's been here since 1930. As the architect indicated, it appears to, there's plenty of evidence inside the building that indicate that it was at one time a two-family dwelling. We do not have any paper records, certificates of occupancy or building permit records indicating that it was, so we're not seeking any type of certification. We're just presenting this as if it's a new conversion, going back to what we believe was once a two-family.
Just quickie, how do you know the dwelling existed in 1930? Because the architect didn't testify to that.
Well, when I went on to the tax records online, it says you're built 1930.
Yeah, okay.
That's just point of order. We did hear someone say that it was 90 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the testimony earlier tonight.
I missed that.
Almost 90, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That's right.
So the tax records, the property record card that the assessor has, that would indicate the use of the building, indicate a
current
family line.
Indicates that it's a single.
No, right, but how about 1930? What did it say?
I did not look at the 1930 tax card.
Okay.
So we didn't go back that far.
Do you know what the earliest one that was available?
I don't.
If you didn't mention 1930, we wouldn't have gone down this side road. Sorry to have interrupted you.
No problem. All right, so assuming that we don't have any records again.
Right, you got an old building.
An old building. We want to convert it to a two-family. We're not proposing any expansion. It's going to maintain its existing footprint. No new addition. Maybe some size maybe. So the property is located in the SR suburban residential zone in the town of Clinton, township of Clinton, sorry. And it's located just north of the Annandale Historic District, which is the VR zone. It's just south of the railroad bridge on Annandale High Ridge Road.
Do you have, I mean to cut you off, do you have an approximate distance? Again, not in I got you, but the VR zone where the Annandale Village is, it does allow for two-family zones. So just to have an idea of how close we are.
I would estimate a quarter mile. It's really not that far. Once you get to the railroad bridge, and just south of that is the VR, so it's maybe less than that.
I think that's within the ballpark.
It's close. So the property. I think it was mentioned some of the surrounding uses. There are single-family dwellings to the south, and those are right along the roadway that have very little setback. Those are about 500 feet away to the south. And just south of them, you can see the railroad right away coming down, and that's right there, just past the bridge. And then directly across the street, we have another two single-family dwellings. Going north, we have the Clinton Township Public Works facility, and there are a number of buildings there. There's an office. They have an office. They have some storage buildings and repair. The salt shed. So the closest building from the dwelling is on the public works facility is their office
and that's about 500 feet away. So there's really not a lot directly in the vicinity of this existing structure. Across the street, these are kind of set back, and you really can't see them too well from the property. So there's really nothing directly adjacent that will be impacted by this. There is an existing parking lot in the front. It's not striped, but there is adequate space for 5 parking spaces directly in front of the building. So that would meet the parking requirements. And then it was already discussed some of the accessory structures on the property, the 2 garages. One looks to be much older, and the other one in the back newer. And then the smaller waste building that was used, I guess, for the farming operation way back in the 1900s. And as was mentioned before, the property is more than twice the gross acreage of what's required, although if you were trying to subdivide it, you wouldn't need variance really if you wanted to make 2 conforming lots. You couldn't do that variance free. Not to say that the planning board wouldn't grant that if you were trying to, you know, subdivide that just into 2 single-family lots, but it would not be a variance free application in any case.
Just to step back to the accessory buildings, what is their proposed use?
Yeah, the 2 accessory garages, are they proposed to be used as garages or not?
That's it, just storage garages, no other use.
Garages in relation to the 2 apartments or garages to be rented out to someone other than who's renting the apartments?
Can we ask Mr. Shapiro to respond to that?
He's sworn in, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just garages for my own use.
Garages for your own use, not for the apartment use?
No.
And then they're not accessory garages, then?
They're not.
Nope.
No.
They're only accessory garages if they're used for cars related to those apartments. If you're going to use them for your own use and you're not going to be occupying one of the apartments, that the use of those garages are going to be a second principal use on the property.
Mm-hmm. Let's double back to that in a few minutes.
Yeah, good idea. Yep.
Can I ask you a question relative to that since we're here, though? So if it's a residential, what I'm confused about is the comment about, well, there's 5 parking spaces in front of the house. Well, that seems indicative of the current zoning, you know, that's commercial, because then you'd have it right in front of the building or whatever. But most people don't have their parking right in front of their house. You know, so if you're making it like a 2-family, which is a house for people, I would think that you wouldn't want the parking right in front of the house. Like, I would think you would want it to be like a garage and like homes, like in the area. So just a thought. I don't know.
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry.
It's not directed towards you. It's directed towards, I think, Mr.
Right.
Shapiro.
Right.
She's saying that before we double back on that and you talk to your attorney about that, you might want to keep in mind what Board Member Stevens is saying. You're giving them food for thought, correct?
I am.
The parking area that's there is existing. It's all, it goes right up to the lower front porch.
I understand.
Yep, she gets it.
Right. I get it. I still have my question. Okay.
So we are here seeking a D1 use variance for a 2-family dwelling, which is not permitted use in the SR zone. It only permits single-family dwellings, agricultural, and municipal uses. So that's the only variance we're looking for. It's just D1, no bulk variances. We're not changing anything on the property. So just going through quickly the criteria for the D1 variance. Under the positive criteria, let's say the property is particularly well-suited for a 2-family dwelling. Number one, because of the indications that the property was once 2-family and the really suitability for it to be easily subdivided back into those 2 units without a whole lot of changes to the building.
You don't mean subdivided, you mean converted.
Subdivide the interior of the 2 separate units.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe subdivide is not the right term for that. The property will not be changing in any regards to the character of the neighborhood. It will still look the same from the properties across the street or from travelers passing by, other than maybe some additional cars in the parking lot, which would be screened.
So, in my opinion, it fits in with the scale and character of the neighborhood, and therefore, it's completely suitable for the properties. And then, purpose E of the municipal land use law for promoting the establishment of appropriate population density. Again, the property is fairly large, it's larger than required for a single family dwelling. And if you actually do the math on a gross acreage calculation, we're lower, a two family dwelling would have a lower density than two single family dwellings. And then purpose M, we're having, by having two family dwellings inside the same building, it's more efficient use of the land than two separate dwellings trying to subdivide it. So moving on to the negative criteria.
Excuse me, sir. Could you just back up?
Sure.
Use M. What is your use M of MLUL?
Yes.
My copy tool. Purpose M?
Yes.
What did yours read?
The more efficient use of land.
Okay. I need a new copy then. Okay.
So moving on to the negative criteria, there will be no substantial detriment to the public good. As I said before, there's not going to be any impact really to the neighborhood. It won't. There's no change to the property other than additional vehicle parking. The building will look the same, and there'll be really no damage to the character of the neighborhood. It's kind of set out there by itself. It's really not connected to anything else. And being adjacent to the municipal facility, there's really no neighbor there to be impacted.
Did he say he or you?
And
a quick question. Yeah. Going back to the positive, did you say E or G? E is appropriate population densities, and G is sufficient space.
I said E.
You said E.
Okay. And M.
Yeah, but the M I got.
Okay. And I think the applicant, as a condition of this approval, will agree not to subdivide or attempt to subdivide the property. If it has a two-family dwelling, it will just be that.
Any increase in traffic or anything from this that have any effect on our roadway in any way?
I would say it would be so minimal that nobody would even notice. I'm not a traffic expert, but I have heard lots of them speak, and I don't think this would even warrant doing a traffic study.
No, I'm not suggesting a traffic study. It's just that your statement is there's not going to be
a minimal
effect on traffic.
Considering that 400 dwelling units are proposed across the street, I didn't mention across the street here, this is lot 23, which is the CRC property, which is in the master plan for 400 affordable housing units. So, adding one additional unit here, I think, is a drop in the bucket. Moving on to the third prong, the negative criteria, you know, substantial detriment to the master plan and the zoning ordinance. I did look at all the various master plan documents going back to 1981, the original master plan. I found that the property here and this roadway was originally zoned for R4, which was the residential district prior to the SR zone. And that master plan states that this zone was established to recognize relatively small areas of concentrated existing development, which has taken place at lot sizes of 2/3 to 3/4 of an acre, and that also permitted multifamily housing at 3 dwelling units per acre if you had 50 acres.
Excuse me, just to be clear, that's not current though, right?
No,
that's just interesting historical documentation.
Changed.
No longer in effect.
The R4 allowed, you said 2/3 to 3/4 acre lots?
That's what was stated in the 1981
right.
master plan.
And what does the SR allow?
The SR currently permits 65,000 square feet.
Right, which is how many acres?
Over 1 acre.
Right, so the more recent zoning has increased the lot size, yeah. Not decreased.
Correct.
So for in the future, I wouldn't mention that.
Right.
R4, but it's out there.
Well, I mean, that's going back to the historic zone.
No, I understand.
Property.
But
yeah,
at that time, you could have subdivided the property into four lots.
Right, but then they increased the zoning so you couldn't. That's why.
Right. But we still have more than double.
I understand.
Right. I think Mr. Joel's making the point. Somebody thought about it and decided that's a bad idea. Let's walk away from that.
Right.
Mr. Joel's coaching. Don't bring that up. That's past history.
Of what was existing.
We understand.
Which people decided was not a good plan.
Right.
Right. Which is why it's no longer effective.
I would say ignore that and just keep on going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have then the 2006 land use plan, which is really still the current land use element of the master plan. There has been reexamination since then, but that is still the standing land use element. So we are affirming some of those goals in the 2006 land use plan, and those were also reiterated in the 2015 reexamination report. So number one, to maintain the special character of the countryside that made the township an attractive place. We are preserving sort of the rural character, preserving the area of wetlands and forested area to the southern portion of that property. We're just maintaining everything exactly the way it is. We're not proposing to add any additional structures. And establishing a development density and intensity at levels which do not exceed the carrying capacity of the natural and built environment. We're maintaining everything the way it is. We're not exceeding. And actually, by removing that septic tank and connecting into public sewer, we're also preserving and enhancing the water quality of the property.
Question? That was the first time I heard anyone say remove the septic tank. So the applicant.
Well,
I heard that too.
Yeah, right. So it'll be a condition of the approval, should the board grant it, that the septic will be removed. Is that right, sir?
The actual, it said the sewer authority allows to collapse the tank in place, fill it with sludge fill. Also, that's just by code, either one can happen. You break up the tank, keep it in place after it's clean, after it's pumped out. Then you can collapse it in place.
So you'd meet whatever requirements the sewer authority stipulates.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And
that's a sewage authority requirement?
They feed off the county. The county could do either way and collapse in place.
Okay, so it's not a CTSA requirement. To either remove it or collapse it, you're saying that's
they can make the choice.
Who?
CTSA can.
So because they're following county guidelines.
Right.
Okay, so who's the applicant going to ask if they want it removed or filled in? Are they going to ask the CTSA or are they going to ask the county?
CTSA. The county gives up their control to it because it's being pumped into the sewer. Did I verb that question?
And how does the CTSA decide which one to allow?
Either is allowable under the code.
Okay, so it's not that they're going to pick. What you're saying is that they allow either, the applicant can choose.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know if it was mentioned earlier, the Highlands District.
Yeah, she mentioned that you don't need any approval, so
yeah.
I wouldn't mention anything about the Highlands because nothing good is going to come of it.
Okay. Very good. Then, that being said, I will conclude my testimony. I'll just reiterate that to the board, I believe you can grant this D1 variance because the site is particularly suitable for the proposed use. We're promoting the purposes of zoning. The use is consistent with the scale and character of the neighborhood. And will accommodate the existing structure on the property, will accommodate the proposed use without any detriment, substantial detriment to the surrounding properties. And the use promotes the master plan goals and objectives.
So I understand the argument that it's particularly suited because the property used to be used for a two family. And other than switching to public sewer, which is an advantage, you don't have any site work you have to do. All you're doing is an internal conversion. But
correct.
Purpose E. I understand that how you could argue that the board granting a use variance would not be inconsistent with the establishment of an appropriate population density, but how does it promote an appropriate population density if the zoning used to be two-thirds to three-quarters acres and now it's 1.5 acres? How does granting the application promote the establishment of an appropriate population density versus not being inconsistent with it?
Well, it's not inconsistent with, and the proposed density would still be less than what's
right.
Permitted.
That goes to the negative criterion. I'm asking, how do you use E for the positive criterion? Because to be positive, it has to promote. To satisfy negative, it can't be inconsistent with. So how are you arguing that the positive criterion is going to be promoted here by granting the D2 variance as to appropriate population density?
Well,
it really goes to the negative, right? That there's no negative.
All intertangled. I mean, you say it's not inconsistent with it, and it also promotes it. It's
well. How does it promote it? Explain. I understand why it's not inconsistent. How does it promote the appropriate population density to allow another unit on the site?
Because it is consistent with the density that was established for the entire zone.
How does it contribute to the well-being of the neighborhood to be a two-family versus a one-family?
It provides an opportunity for a two-family dwelling in this setting.
Right, I understand that. How does it promote the well-being of the neighborhood? How does that make the neighborhood better?
It makes it better than subdividing into two single-family lots.
But by your own testimony, you can't be divided into two single-family lots.
No,
because
I didn't say you can. I said you couldn't do two conforming lots because of the wetlands constraints.
So then how do you subdivide it if you can't do two conforming lots?
By bulk variance.
All right, I got nothing further.
Okay. I just had a few questions about the particular suitability. Are there any aspects of the site's context within the community, other than being consistent with the character, but location within, in terms of proximity to amenities, transportation, et cetera, that might lend itself to being suited?
The property is very much in proximity to the Annandale Historic District, the more dense village core of the town, and it's has proximate access to the major highways in the region, I-78 and Route 22.
Are there any examples of similar types of development in terms of a structure that might look like this that is divided into two or more units, in whether it's in Annandale or in this zone in particular? That
I did not see any in this zone. There are some two-family dwellings in Annandale. I did not do a detailed survey of Annandale, but I know that two families are permitted there. And I did notice there were some.
It's obviously a separate zone, but just to see if the area, whether historically or even today, it makes sense that there might be some two families that are outside of the VR zone, or you know, if there are buildings that look like that in the VR zone that may have been subdivided. Super divided, similar.
I can't give any specific examples.
Okay, it's just a question.
Questions for the planner, and then Mr. Schraff, a couple questions for you. Thanks for other questions to the planner? No? Okay, thanks. So are you going to offer a testimony, or can I just throw a couple questions your way?
Please, go right ahead. We still need to speak privately for about 1 minute about the garages, but please, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. And when you speak to him about the garages, can you also ask him about, because I know Tom's going to ask you, so I'll give you a heads up, he's going to ask you about the number of bedrooms. So don't say anything now, but when you talk about garages, talk to her but also about the number of bedrooms.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple questions, and then we can maybe just take a couple minutes without all leaving the room, and you can discuss. If you need to leave the room, we'll take a break. So I just want to ask a couple things around the line of alternate use. So how long have you owned the building, sir?
A year.
A year, okay. And do you know when it was last occupied?
A year ago.
A year ago there was a person. It was
the owner was living in it.
The owner was living in there and using the...
Wait. Scratch that. The owner had a renter in it, but the renter was, like, leaving simultaneously the owner leaving.
They went their separate ways.
So I believe it was a renter. I don't know 100%, but yes.
Okay, so someone was living in there a year ago.
Yeah.
Okay, and they were using the septic. Is the septic functional?
The septic's functional. It's not great.
Not great. Maybe on its last legs. I shouldn't be putting words in your mouth there.
That would be an adequate, good description.
Yeah. Okay. So the alternative use to a two-family, if no variance were granted, would be what?
A one-family.
Right. And as a rental, I mean, if that would be your plan if this doesn't pass, to rent it as a one-family?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I don't have any other questions, thank you. Anyone else have questions for owner? You guys want to take 5 minutes, or do you want to sit
five,
and talk?
Take 5 minutes. You can go down to one of the...
May I ask?
Sure.
I do have a question. So how was the basement and the attic used by the prior owner, do you know?
Living space.
Yeah,
so
living
they,
space, yeah.
They had bedrooms in the upstairs attic area. They had one bedroom that was like a kid's room. It's kind of like a teenager's room.
Uh-huh.
Big posters on the walls. And the downstairs area was like, you know, kind of like a giant living room, you know, with a big screen TV and couches, et cetera.
Okay.
Yeah, they had a family in there.
Okay.
It's like four kids or something.
Okay. So we'll take a 5-minute recess. That'll be
thank
enough for you.
That'll be good.
It's 8:39 by my watch. Okay, back on the record.
Thank you, Chairman. Let's start with the number of bedrooms. Spoke to Mr. Shapiro, and he was willing to limit the future use of the building if the use variance is granted to 2 3-bedroom units, which, given the size and the floors and everything, is probably, it's certainly not the maximum that it could be. All right, let's talk about the garage.
Right.
So, just to put it in context, this is not a situation.
Hold on 1 second. Does someone have their personal communication device anywhere near that mic and their microphone? There you go. We finally figured out
what that then causes it.
Yep,
yeah.
It's been driving us crazy for over 2 years.
It's just they have the phone on.
If the phone is near a microphone,
their microphones.
It does that. We don't know why, but at least we know what it is now.
And that's what's buzzing in your head when you hold the phone next to your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it must just be certain phones, because my phone and my iPad are both right against the microphone.
Wow.
So.
Well, the next buzz will be you.
No, it stopped. As soon as Sharon moved, it stopped.
And the
sorry
thing
about
is
that.
I never have my
phone.
Yeah.
Okay, so... this is a situation where Mr. Shapiro obviously will not be living on the property. If 2 units are allowed to be created, they both will be rentals. And so he will continue through his company to be the landlord of the property. So in my view, there's nothing very unusual about a landlord owning a property and continuing to use outbuildings that are located on that property, perhaps for personal storage, which is what Mr. Shapiro is suggesting. So in my view, I believe this fits into the idea of an accessory use. It's a use naturally and normally incident and subordinate to the principal use of the premises or lot. And so...
But what are you saying the principal use of the lot is?
For 2 rental dwelling units.
Dwelling units.
And... Mr. Shapiro tells me he has an old car collection, and that's what he would be keeping in one or both of the garages.
So which of the, go to Ordinance Section 165-135, which of the permitted accessory uses would you say applies? And know if, realize if you say private garage, you have to look up the definition of private garage.
John, what was the code again, please?
Oh, it's 165-135. Those are the permitted accessory uses in all the residential zones. And A is private garages. But if you look up the definition of a private garage, you, because I think we just did this with the planning board at the last meeting.
There's a definition for private garage?
Yeah.
Is it under garages?
Garage private.
Okay.
A detached accessory building or portion of the main building used for storage of motor vehicles, and at least the